As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Champions League shootout drama. From the Emirates to the Metropolitano, people missing and shots going awry like a Kensington Palace family portrait. We relive all the drama of the midweek games. Plus, we hear about the madness of Wednesday night's Bournemouth-Luton in the Premier League. We'll be catching up on what awaits this weekend in the league and in the FA Cup quarterfinals with Man United, Liverpool and more in this Totally Football Show. Thursday, 14th of March. Listener, rubbing my hands with glee because we've got another show of shows for you today. Duncan Alexander's here. Hello, Duncan.
Hello.
Also, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
Nice to see you, Raph. And Tom Williams.
Hello, James.
Tom, have you brought a copy of your new book, Va Va Voom?
I have not, but we'll be getting my hands on it shortly.
When is it?
Within the next couple of weeks. So it's out April 25th.
Oh, right.
Available for pre-order already. Coming out in ebook and audiobook. I actually convened a brainstorming session about the title.
Oh yeah,
a few months back.
Oh yeah, what were the other options?
Some totally favourites.
So the book is a history of French football.
It is the modern history of French football,
which would be a great title in itself.
But that's the subtitle.
Okay, what were the other options?
There were many. And Duncan's contribution,
but
was
as many as
Big Pharma, which did not make the final.
I think it's good.
Final shortlist, sadly for Duncan.
But as many options as French wins in European competitions.
The campaigns?
No, oh, it's slightly more. Slightly more, right, options than.
But Va Va Voom, that's catchy.
It's catchy, it's punchy. It's kind of, you know, it kind of speaks to the slightly enigmatic, racy side to French football, I think.
A bit of 90s visually. Nostalgia in there as
90s,
well.
90s, noughties nostalgia, which is, you know, kind of what the book is all about.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And yeah, hitting the shelves in just over a month.
That's now two books you've written, Tom, is it? Or is it more?
Yes, two.
All right. Raph, how many are you on now?
Too many to count, James. That's how many.
Jesus,
that's
a lot of books.
Three. He's got it. It's three.
Five
books.
Plus one translation.
Wow. That's insane. And Duncan, you've written a book as well.
Two. I'm on two.
Are you on two?
Yeah, I'm on
what
two.
What are your ones?
There was the Up to Joe yearbook and then
I don't know if a
books.
Yearbook counts. Does
well,
a yearbook
it was
count?
All written by me.
So, oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Obviously, the best thing here is that Alex Ferguson actually wrote more books than the Bronte sisters. So,
always with the stat Bronte that sisters. Defines the subject. Excellent. We had two shootouts this week in the Champions League. Have you got a stat about that, Duncan?
Yeah. That it was the first one, and this did confuse a lot of people since the 2016 final.
2,844 days.
Mm.
And then we got 2 and 2 days, et cetera, and so on. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
I guess
amazing,
that's,
no?
That's because of the away goals rule being abolished. It makes deadlocks more likely.
Yeah, but that's been gone for a couple of seasons. True. So
I was surprised by it, you know, even notwithstanding that detail.
Yeah.
A surprising stat.
Perhaps you'll be taken aback by this little fact, that of the last five Champions League shootouts, four have featured Atletico Madrid.
That's less surprising, I think.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
They feel quite shootouty, don't they?
They are a very shootouty team.
But
nevertheless.
And of course, they've got the Man in Black, which is quite shootout, you know, adjacent, isn't it?
With his Saltburn style fall to the ground.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Drama. We'll get on to that drama and more.
Are you
very,
sure?
Very shortly.
he went all the way?
Well.
We'll also touch on, he said, gliding over that little segment of conversation, we'll also touch on the extraordinary madness, perhaps the game of the midweek, which didn't take place in the Champions League, but in the Premier League at the Vitality Stadium, the Bournemouth-Luton madness. Bournemouth 3-0 down at half-time, roaring back to win 4-3. When was the last time something like that happened in the Premier League, Duncan Alexander?
Yeah, that was the first time it happened since Wolves-Leicester in 2003, and only the fifth time it's ever happened in Premier League. 3-0 is officially not a dangerous lead, except very occasionally.
Right, so. Wow. Talk about how dangerous it could be for Luton a little bit later on. But Champions League, first of all, the quarterfinals are set now. You've got three Spanish sides in there, two German teams, two English outfits, and one French equipe. No Italians. A year ago, there were more sides from Serie A than any of the other leagues, but not this time. Big blow for the Italian coefficient, although they're still top as we await Thursday's games in the Europa and Conference League. The draw for who gets who in the quarterfinals is going to be coming up Friday from 11 o'clock UK time. We're going to start our look back on the midweek action with Arsenal-Porto.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Tuesday, Arsenal pit Porto on penalties. Duncan, you were there.
I was there.
Oh, right. As Arsenal reached quarterfinals for the first time in 14 years. Penalty drama. What was that like at the Emirates?
Very dramatic.
Yes.
And I think there was a sense of calm. I think Arsenal got an incredible penalty record this year. They've scored every one, obviously including
9 out of 9 in the Premier League.
Yeah.
4 out of 4 in this shootout. 4 out of 4 in the Community Shield against Man City.
Yeah, and I think people felt pretty calm, and so it was all down to David Raya, really.
Yeah.
What could he do? And I think, you know, he's obviously had a at points difficult first season at the club, but I think this was the night that he really sort of emerged as a figure. And I think, given it came after the weekend when obviously Ramsdale came back in and, you know, did make some good saves, but also made a fairly bad error.
Mm.
It did feel like this was the night that the home supporters really kind of embraced him and he became part of Arsenal.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Two saves in the penalty shootout.
Yeah. Nearly three as well. So.
Nearly three, yeah.
One more fortuitous than the other one.
In the leg,
when
reverse
he touched
leg.
The ball onto the post and it came back and hit him on the back of the heels and still went wide.
Wow.
I mean, you know, how's your luck? How's your luck, David? Well. Pretty decent.
Yeah.
I guess he would reply.
The Athletic does a nice piece about what happened when the final whistle blew on the extra time period and he was straight over to an assistant manager on the bench who had the spreadsheet loaded up with all the Porto precedents.
Both keepers were. Both actually were taken away to go through it and it kind of shows how far we've come, really, I guess. Mm. Was it Ben Foster in the League Cup final that had it on an iPod once?
And an iPod?
I think it was an iPod.
You had to put headphones in and listen.
Yeah, go to the left, to the left. Yeah, it was, the research now, the whole, like, it's a lottery, should be retired for good, I think.
Although, funnily enough, Jan Oblak used that exact phrase about, perhaps being a little bit modest, about Atletico's own shootout with Inter the following night. But anyway.
I mean, Didier Deschamps still says the penalty shootouts are a lottery, which might explain why France's penalties in the 2022 World Cup final were as disastrous as they were. Because he doesn't think you can really prepare, which really puts him in the minority amongst modern elite coaches. But, you know.
And Mikel Arteta certainly would disagree. Further evidence, Rafa, that this Arsenal is different Arsenal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it speaks for itself, that record. First time in 14 years.
Mm.
At their first attempt back in the Champions League. So the narrative that they're too young, too inexperienced, I think that's already being rolled back. We could see how sturdy they are defensively, super solid side. I think probably we're at the stage where so many people have said it that it's no longer a secret, but they are defending incredibly well and people perhaps don't always give them credit for it because we still have an idea of Arsenal as perhaps slightly flaky from the olden days or the beginnings of the Arteta reign. But now they're very hard to score against. And even when they're not quite in it, and I felt that with the ball, they didn't have that much going for themselves on Tuesday night, they're hard to break down. Right. And they just stay in the game, and then they find maybe one moment, and that's the side of a team that can go really far also in this competition, in my view.
At the moment, on Tuesday, coming from Leandro Trossard, who had a busy night scoring a key goal, also starring in about 35 billion social media posts. Featuring him and referee Clement Turpin. And you have to say, it's extraordinary.
I've never noticed the resemblance before. And these are obviously, you know, a very high-profile referee and a well-known Premier League footballer. But you put them side by side and they look like twins.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
The other weird thing about this was that Turpin's reputation, correct me if I'm wrong, in France is very much of being the most card-happy of officials. And yet, Tuesday, he was all about letting it flow.
He let it go, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That was interesting because producer Charlie said that, as someone who'd watched it on the TV, that the commentators were being quite complimentary.
Oh, no, they were.
That wasn't the vibe at the stadium. I mean, obviously, at stadiums.
Is it ever?
No, true. But as a
Bravo referee.
No, but as a semi-neutral, I did think he was willfully lenient in the sense that there were times when Porto players were kicking the ball away. There were players going off injured that just came straight back on.
Quite a few robust challenges. It was obviously part of Porto's game plan was to, you know, block the centre of the pitch. But Wendell against Saka, quite a lot of meaty challenges.
The ball was in play for like an hour of 120 minutes, and he added a minute at the end of the first half and three at the end of the. I joked to my son that there'd probably be only 2 minutes at the end of the first half, and then when the board went up and it was one.
Well, you must be delighted because it's a.
Alexander quit.
True, yeah. But it was unusual. I mean, you know, I'm not against it. It was a throwback display from a referee, but it was like all the recent edicts from Pogmal and IFAB and whoever were just forgotten.
Well, and it was the same thing in the Atletico Inter game last night. That was refereed by Simon Marciniak in the same way. And I think one of the frustrations sometimes as a fan of Premier League football is that you often find yourself watching European games and finding that referees are clamping down on rough and tumble that would be, you know, permitted in the Premier League. So, yeah, from, I guess, a kind of Anglo-centric perspective, it feels welcome. But it must be a frustration if you know, you're not used to that kind of refereeing. You're used to slightly stricter refereeing in your domestic league. And then in the Champions League, it becomes a bit of a free-for-all.
Mm.
But I don't think there were any scandals, were there, in either of those games?
No, I mean, Kai Havertz ran into Sergio Conceição at one point.
There was also Tweakgate at the Metropolitana.
Oh,
when Marcus Thuram wandering, busy hands.
Cup action of the wrong kind. Mm. Yeah. But they laughed about it after. They had a chortle together, didn't they? Arsenal, perhaps still some concerns about how effective they are breaking down a team that sits in a defensive block, but they managed to get past Porto anyway. They've now got several weeks off.
And also just to say, Martin Odegaard's assist was a thing of absolute
extraordinary
beauty.
Night.
And Porto had marshalled that space so successfully with Varela and Gonzalez in front of the back four. He barely touched the ball in the first half, Odegaard, up to that point. And he had to do so many different things in such a short space of time to create the space, wait for Trossard to make the run, thread the pass in between centre-back and full-back, and it was chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. Mm. Yep, a few weeks off for Arsenal now, and then Manchester City, which will be huge for the Premier League and quite possibly could be significant in the Champions League as well, because they could end up facing each other. Mm. Anyway, Pens on Wednesday too, Atletico for some, against Inter at the Civitas Metropolitano. Football, eh? Atletico at the weekend had just been beaten 2-0 by Cadiz, a team that hadn't won a game since September. But they then, a couple of days later, beat a side that hadn't lost since September, Inter, who'd won 13 straight matches. How?
I mean, it was a brilliant game. Like, very cagey, as you'd expect. Inter had 1-0 advantage from the first leg. Mm. Obviously had the form. Atletico had no form whatsoever, but they're at home. There's the Diego Simeone factor. And, yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, Atletico were quite happy to allow Inter to have the ball for quite a lot. Didn't really kind of engage them until they got to the halfway line. Inter was sort of threatening on the break a couple of times, scored a really nicely constructed goal after about half an hour Varela gets played in down the left and then outside the right foot pass to Federico Di Marco, who scores, and you thought, okay, well, that's that. Inter, the best defensive team in Europe's top five leagues. They've now got a 2-0 advantage. It's probably done. 2 minutes later, Griezmann scores. Atletico get back into the game. And then Atletico were on top most of the second half. Thuram squanders a brilliant chance with about 50 minutes to go, clean through, blazes over the crossbar. Simeone sends on Memphis Depay, who goes close a couple of times, hits the post, and then, I think with 3 minutes to go, takes this pass from Koke on the turn, drills it bottom left, and again, Atletico mainly on top in extra time, and then Oblak did the business in the shootout.
Inter undone by Depay, like that Sutton United goalkeeper, I couldn't help but think.
Indeed.
And then it went to penalties, but yeah, Inter could have buried this, first through Thuram and then Barella with a big chance, but it was a night when their big names disappointed, Martinez as well in the shootout.
Dreadful penalty.
While certainly the substitutions in the duel between Simeone and Simeone, the substitutions were certainly hailed in the Italian press as being key, that move to bring on Memphis and also Riquelme. Gazzetta this morning, they threw it away. While Marca in Spain went with brutal, yeah, which I think is a respectful brutal. And by heart and by Oblak, that's how they won it. Says ass, woof.
I mean, brutal's also the penalty shootout. I've never seen some penalties hit so hard. Absolutely. Yeah. If the Arsenal penalty shootout was quite a considered, intelligent penalty shootout, this was just a brawl of a penalty shootout. So absolute rocket.
Pablo Correa fired one in off the crossbar and then kind of laughed almost as if he couldn't believe that he managed to pull off this absurdly unsavable penalty.
A la Pressman, I think they call
it. Yeah, very much a la Pressman.
Rough night for James Horncastle, who was riding high on his correct prediction that Arsenal Porto would go to extra time, but had also tipped into win the Champions League. So, yeah, that didn't go so well. Oh, well. Atletico through elsewhere. It was Liga 2 City and nil this week because Barcelona beat Napoli on Tuesday. Xavi afterwards coming out fighting. We were the clowns of the Champions League, he told the press. But who's laughing now? Yeah. I'm not sure who is laughing now. Barcelona. Ooh, Pau Cubarsí is laughing now. What a performance on a night when the kids stepped up, a beleaguered Barcelona, with a game that they couldn't afford to lose because, money. But fantastic. They became the first team in Champions League history, Duncan, to name a starting 11 with two players aged 17 or younger in it. Yamal, who we're getting used to, but Pau Cubarsí.
Yeah, I mean, we're used to the levers at Barcelona, but they've also got a secret lever where they just pull it and more young talent emerges.
Wow. So. Well, it's La Masia, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's been a while since we've seen a golden generation, but there's talk that this could be something pretty special because there's a whole crop of them coming through.
I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, they're still a good team, but I think a lot of teams will hope to draw Barcelona in the quarterfinals, which is a change from Champions League history.
True, because this was a fine 3-1 victory over Napoli, but Napoli, defensively, a bit all at sea in that kind of three-minute spell in the first half when Barcelona effectively turned the tie around. A third goal coming later on through the not-quite-so-young Robert Lewandowski. 94 now in 118 Champions League games. He's the third highest scorer in the competition's history, etc., and so on. Would you want Barcelona in the draw, Raf?
For what team? Oh, generally speaking.
Yeah. Königstein FC.
If you ask me from a German perspective, I think both Dortmund and Bayern would love to play against Barcelona.
Bayern, do they have nice precedents against Barcelona?
Recently, yes. Yes, but trips to the Nou Camp haven't always been successful. There you go. Mm. That will change their luck.
All right.
But it's nice for La Liga in a season where the competition was deemed over by some, that they've now got the most teams in the quarterfinals.
Three Spanish sides, it's so true. Hey, the coefficient, who wants to know what's happening with the coefficient after all of that?
Me.
It's exciting. Yeah.
You recall that the top two teams in this particular coefficient ranking, top two nations, will earn their leagues an extra spot in next year's very, very exciting looking new Champions League format. Swiss. very exciting. Swiss, synonymous, really. Italy, still top with 16.571. Germany, Rafa, on 15.928. They've closed the gap a little bit there. England, who need to overtake one of the top two, are currently on 15 point nothing. But a lot of
teams still involved.
But Europa and Conference League have same weighting in this thing.
I think Ops have got a predictive model, and Premier League's still on around 68-70%.
So what does Opta say?
So the Premier League's most likely to get one of the spots, and then Italy was, but we know after this week we'll see how it's changed.
And in exciting coefficient news,
is it France and Netherlands?
It is France related. PSV's elimination last night by Dortmund means that France are assured of holding on to fifth place in the coefficient table for another season. So another
three teams and possibly a fourth through the playoffs.
Yes. So great news for anyone who may have a book about French football about to be released.
Julien Laurens yesterday bouncing up and down on the sofa with that. That's the one game we haven't touched on yet, Rafa. PSV beaten in a game they really could have at least taken to extra time away at the Signal Iduna Park. No, loads of chances, especially after Chucky Lozano came on. So, yeah, it began brilliantly for Dortmund. It was 1-1 off the first leg. Jadon Sancho with his second goal in two matches.
Noch einmal Sabitzer, zurückgelegt. Sancho. Tor! 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 Dritte Minute! Sancho! Wie geil ist das denn? Das Stadion bebt!
Yes, got from outside the box, which I'm not big in stats, but I've got a feeling this might be his first ever goal outside the box.
Leave it.
Certainly felt like a novelty seeing him score from that distance. Great shot. And Dortmund had a great start. They were all over PSV. The crowd were there. There was a real sense of energy, and PSV were not ready for it for some reason. They left loads of spaces. Dortmund had tons of chances and could have taken one or two more of them. And then things quietened down, and then PSV towards the end of the first half started really playing. And then the second, the game swung completely their way. It was one-way traffic. Dortmund really couldn't hold on to the ball much, but rolled out their luck. Gregor Kobel again, very, very good performance from him. He's probably their best player, their keeper, Swiss keeper. And then in the last minute, Luke de Jong, with lots of goal to aim at, sort of just leans back and blasts it over with his left foot. And almost immediately, Dortmund go the other end and score after Babadi slips and lets Royce through on goal. So, yeah, a good performance in terms of the attitude, resilience, passion. It had all those sort of basics. But as a football team, there's probably an argument that Dortmund are the worst side left in this competition. Mm.
I mean, something quite nice that the group of death is the only group that's supplied two quarterfinalists. So, congrats, group of death.
Indeed, Paris Saint-Germain, the other side.
They were toughened up by the experience. Mm, and
going to St James's Park and seeing men celebrate throw-ins. Yeah.
Hardened in the fire of Group F.
Yeah.
Alrighty, all very exciting. However, as previously mentioned, there's a strong case that the most thrilling fixture of midweek actually came many miles to the west of there in Bournemouth. We'll be touching on the madness at Vitality next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Here's your now. It's Semenya. Incredible! 4-3 Bournemouth in one of the comebacks of the season.
Wednesday night at the Vitality, it was Bournemouth-Luton. This was Luton's game in hand, a win would take the Hatters out of the bottom three and drop Nottingham Forest into it. Their opponents, Bournemouth, had one win in their previous eight. The Athletic's Elias Burke was at the Vitality for what unfolded, and he joins us now. Elias, thank you for being with us. Hello. Wednesday night at the Vitality. There, Istanbul.
Yeah, you could call it that. It was pretty insane, to be honest. Like, I mean, first half, Luton were just kind of all over Bournemouth. They were in full control. They looked like well on their way to a massive win that obviously would have taken them out of the relegation zone. But in the second half, Bournemouth came roaring out. I'm not sure if it was something that Andoni Iraola said or Rob Edwards didn't say, but Luton looked shell-shocked and Bournemouth looked supremely confident, came out, and it was a massive second half. I mean, an unbelievable goal from Dominic Solanke, and then, a winner from Anton Semenyo 7 minutes until time. So, yeah, great game.
It was fantastic. What was the atmosphere like at the Vitality? Boos at half-time for the home team, but then at the final whistle?
Yeah, it was strange, to be honest, because, I mean, even after Solanke scored that goal 5 minutes after half-time, people were still kind of, you know, warming to the fact that something might have happened. You know, it was 3-0 and then turned 3-1. So, you know, it would have taken a massive comeback from that point to get something. So, yeah, it was, you know, incredible. Second half, when Semenyo's goal went in, the roar was just incredible. So, yeah, final whistle, crazy. Bournemouth are on a really good streak at the moment. So, massive disappointment for Luton, who obviously, coming from halftime, looked like they might have been out of the relegation zone, but just collapsed towards the end.
Indeed. It's rare when you get one of those moments when a team is absolutely on it and can almost score at will. And we certainly had that with the Cherries after the Solanke goals you mentioned. Were three goals in the space of, what, 14 minutes to totally turn things around?
Yeah, Solanke's goal, as I said, was brilliant. And then the second goal from Zabanyu was from a corner. It was a header. It looked to have kind of been cleared off the line, but, you know, the referee gave it. It crossed the line. And then just a few minutes later, Semenyo went and scored a great finish with his left foot to make it 3-3. And then from that point, it was, I think, 15 minutes after until Semenyo finally found the winner. So it was a case of, like, would they find it? Would they not? Would it kind of peter out to a 3-0 draw? Peter out is maybe the wrong phrase for that kind of game. But they found the winner. And it was a hectic 15 minutes after the second half started, yeah.
Mm. Your favourite game of the season so far?
I'd have to say so. I mean, definitely the best game that I've been to. As I say, the atmosphere was incredible. The goals were amazing. And, the fact that Luton were in such a precarious position made it all the more exciting, the fact that they kind of collapsed towards the end, yeah.
All right. Elias, magnificent. Enjoy your journey home and congratulations for picking the right game to go to on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. Cheers. Thank you.
Elias Burke, who heads back Londonwards with a less heavy heart than his Luton counterparts the previous night, They must have been absolutely gutted by that. 8 matches now without a win in all competitions, but also to see yourself collapse like that in the second half, what kind of repercussions do you anticipate?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because if you look at Luton's recent form, around the turn of the year, they hit a bit of a purple patch. One at home to Newcastle, one at Sheffield United, thrashed Brighton 4-0. And in their next game, they were 4-2 up away at Newcastle with 25 minutes to play. Since then, they haven't won a game and won 7 league games without a win. And as annoying as going 4-2 up at Newcastle and not winning would have been, I suspect going 3-0 up at relatively lowly Bournemouth and losing will have stung quite a lot.
It leaves them 3 points behind Nottingham Forest still now with no games in hand. Maybe a little bit of a PSR ace up their sleeve, we shall see. But meantime, who should they be facing this weekend? But Nottingham Forest, this is back at Kenilworth Road. Should be a feisty affair, a lot on this one, either side of the dotted line.
I mean, ordinarily it would feel like a bit of a relegation 6-pointer. And particularly since if Forest win, they would go 6 points clear of Luton. Right. Obviously, the literal relegation 6-pointer.
But then again, 6 points could well be.
Well, that's the thing. You could just lose it like that. And that does make it hard to kind of know how much significance there is. I mean, Luton are obviously the only team who stand any chance of falling themselves out the bottom three, you would think.
You would think.
And have looked the most kind of, you know, kind of upwardly mobile and interesting team of the 3 promoted teams since the start of the season. Forest and Everton, Brentford as well, are only just above them. But the fact that there is this possibility of a points reduction against Forest, further points reduction against Everton, means that it is, yeah, it's sort of hard to pronounce with any kind of certainty on the significance of this game.
Right. I mean, they do.
But that, I mean, it is obviously significant. Don't get me wrong.
It's still significant. Luton's remaining home games are all fairly winnable. They've got, you know, Bournemouth at home, so maybe not. But they've got Everton at home as well, Brentford, Fulham. So I think they're still in with a very good shout, even without points deduction, asterisks, action. But, you know, this game is a must win for both teams, I would say.
The reverse fixture at the City Ground, here's the thing, saw Forest 2-0 up. And they threw that lead away. It was the Hatters who stormed back to claim a point. That was in October. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's going to be absolutely fascinating. Again, not on TV in the UK, certainly, because it's a Saturday 3 o'clock game. There are only 3 other matches this weekend in the Premier League. You've got bottom of the table Burnley hosting Brentford. That's also Saturday at 3. The Bees currently 5 points clear of the relegation scrap. Fulham take on Spurs at 5:30, and at 2 o'clock on Sunday, West Ham Aston Villa, aka the David Cameron Lying Tory Classico.
Emotions in the Cameron household, you think, for that one.
Yeah.
Well, they get the colours right, so, you know.
Yeah. He's guaranteed to win. That's what, when you support both teams.
I would posit that this is the most annoying and frustrating weekend of action of the season, because you have 4 Premier League games, you have 4 FA Cup games, they all cross over with each other. It's just really bitty, and it shouldn't happen.
Do you feel?
Mm.
Sometimes it's nice when narratives intertwine.
Well, fun for all the family, for the FA Cup lovers, for the
I don't want a buffet, I want a high quality Our League meal.
Well, our perhaps cup? Perhaps you'll get one or four of those, because you know, there are interesting elements to all these games. West Ham, Villa, both teams will be in action Thursday night in pretty delicately poised matches in the Europa League and Conference League. Villa have John McGinn suspended. They've never won at the London Stadium. Good Lord. In fact, they haven't won away to the Hammers since a match at Upton Park 13 years ago. I wonder if you can name who the 2 managers were 13 years ago for West Ham and Aston Villa.
So that's what, 2011?
Can name the Prime Minister.
Avram Grant.
Avram Grant was one. But who was in charge for Aston Villa? Listener?
Is it a Frenchman?
Is it Remy Gard?
No. Funnily enough, that's what I'd thought. But producer Charlie reveals it was actually his co-national, his fellow countryman, as they say, Gerard Houllier.
Gerard
Houllier.
I've forgotten about that.
Anyway, that's enough West Ham. Aston Villa preview, as I say, they're playing Thursday night. And then they'll play Sunday at 2, and we'll review it on Sunday evening, as we will Fulham Spurs, which comes up Saturday tea time. You can watch this on Sky, actually. Although it clashes with Man City Newcastle in the FA Cup Duncan. Frustration. Yeah.
Big weekend in the race for the top four. You think particularly in the light of that Spurs win at Villa
top
last weekend.
For me.
Top four, or the top five, whatever it is. Because, you know, in the space of that one match, you think Spurs have now got the advantage. Probably have them as favourites, I think, perhaps slightly to finish up above Villa.
Perhaps. And also, that point notwithstanding, on Saturday, 3 o'clock, you've got Burnley-Brentford. Burnley winless in their last eight. Brentford have won just three of the last 17. So, yeah. Anyway, as I say, we'll review all of that come Sunday evening. And we'll also be talking about, Duncan, the FA Cup, which is taking place this weekend as well. The quarterfinals. Shall we move on to that?
The sixth round.
The sixth round, which we'll get on to next.
People did call it the sixth round, didn't they, traditionally? You used to get people straight into the semis.
People used to get annoyed if you called it the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
No, it's
the
sixth round. It's like, all right, yeah.
When they'll be after the fifth round next, Duncan, and when they've come for the fifth round.
What do they call that?
When they came for the sixth round, I said nothing.
Yeah.
And they came for the fifth round. I said nothing. If they come for the third round, they'll be in trouble. The
round of 64.
What they call the final
of 252 or
the half final. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Anyway, more top FA Cup chat like this next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Cup news. Oh, lovely PSG 3-1 victory over Nice.
Yes.
Midweek in the
semis.
Coupe de France in the round of septième.
It's confusing in France because the quarterfinals are Le Quart. No, actually, that isn't confusing. It's the one before. The last 16 is the huitième de finale.
Yeah,
so it's
same
the
in Germany,
one over eight.
Yeah. You do, ottavi di finale. Yeah.
It makes mathematical sense, but if you're not very good with numbers, it throws me.
Right.
The eighth final?
Kylian Mbappé did quite a number.
Yes, Kylian Mbappé, who is no longer first choice in the league because Luis Enrique is preparing the team for next season.
Of course.
He only now starts in the Champions League and the Cup. So having been rested at the weekend, he was fresh to open the scoring.
In some fashion.
Yeah, and in a pretty one-sided victory over a Nice team who are slithering down the league and standings and out of the Cup in pretty dispiriting fashion after a pretty positive first half of the season.
Okay. The Sir Jim Ratcliffe effect in full effect. Nice. Cup action in Germany as well, Rafa. Any big stories there?
No, nothing. Just the usual.
Luca Chiara. Der gefällt mir super. Sevilla, der dreht jetzt auch nochmal auf. Der Ball ist sehr gut für Kai Brücker. Das gibt's doch nicht. Das gibt es doch nicht. Was ist denn hier los? Kai Brücker.
Another top team knocked out by Saarbrücken.
Saarbrücken. So Saarbrücken are from where?
The
which
Saarland.
Division? Is it third?
Third division.
Third division. And they've already knocked Bayern out. And then they beat Eintracht Frankfurt in the, how do you say, eighth?
Achtelfinale.
Yeah, there you go. Last 16. And good Lord. And then they did Gladbach with a 93rd minute goal. Incredible. Into the semi-finals they go. Where they're going to be playing Kaiserslautern out of Bundesliga 2, I'm guessing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's...
So that leaves Leverkusen as the only Bundesliga side left in this competition.
Right.
They've got Düsseldorf in their semi-final, Düsseldorf from Bundesliga 2. And that's never happened before.
Okay.
Only one Bundesliga team in the last four.
Has there ever been a cup run like Saarbrücken?
Yes, there has been. It used to be that the amateur sides from the big Bundesliga teams were allowed to play in the cup as well.
Mm.
And there was a run by Hertha BC 2 from either the third or fourth division all the way to the final.
Wow.
Where they played Leverkusen.
No way.
And lost.
When was that?
1993.
Good Lord. Knowledge, right?
A bit like the 1980 Copa del Rey final, which was between Real Madrid and their reserve team.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And Real Madrid won 6-1, which...
Which one, though?
A tough... Yeah, well, the first team, I'm sure it was a tough old battle.
Oh, bless. Anyway, FA Cup quarterfinals for us, a.k.a. sixth round. You've got 12:15 on Saturday, Wolves Coventry, their first meeting in a decade. At 5:30 on Saturday, clashing, as mentioned, with Fulham Spurs, it's Man City Newcastle. Sunday, 12:45, Chelsea meet Leicester in a repeat of the 2021 final. And at 3:30, Man United Liverpool. Woo! Feels like we should start with that one. How big is Man United Liverpool for Man United in particular?
I think it's very big. I think if United win, I wouldn't say it's a potential season saver.
Ooh.
But, you know...
It sort of is.
Kind of. I mean, it's basically all they've got left.
It's all they've
pretty
got.
Pretty much. They're not going to get Champions League. But if they can
still get
knock,
fifth, couldn't they?
I keep forgetting that fifth is good enough. Mm. Yeah, I need to get my head around.
But they'll need Liverpool to probably win the Europa League, so they can cheer them on.
How many points are they off fifth place?
They are currently 6 points off fifth place, and fifth place Tottenham have a game in hand.
Yeah,
so even fifth place is looking unlikely. You would, unless you know Villa or Spurs collapse completely.
Mm.
But if they can knock Liverpool out of the FA Cup...
Off their perch,
sort of, and deny Jurgen Klopp a
quadruple in tatters.
Quadruple dreams in tatters. They get a trip to Wembley, you know, get a kind draw, get into the final. I think if Ten Hag wins the FA Cup this season, it gets harder for Ineos to sack him, which is not to say that they won't sack him, but I mean, it's another trophy for him, having won the League Cup last season.
It would be quite the achievement if they were to get past Liverpool and then win the FA Cup. Their record against Jurgen Klopp's side, not good. They've won only 3 of their last 18 meetings.
There was obviously the 5-0 in the Premier League a few years back, which Liverpool... that was probably the worst thing for United, was that Liverpool eased up, didn't they? Sort of basically took it easy in the second half. So
this is the 7-0, of course. Let's not forget.
7-0 was at Anfield, yeah, but the 5-0 at Old Trafford, particularly painful. The last meeting came only last December. That was at Anfield and it was 0-0. This was in the Premier League. But by and large, Liverpool have Man United's number of late. Liverpool running on pure emotion, Rafa.
Well, I'm not so sure, James. I mean, I asked Klopp after that draw against City last week, what is the difference? They had so many injuries last year and the form kind of collapsed and Klopp wouldn't stop talking about the injuries and how they have no rhythm and they can't change. And what is it so different this year? And he didn't really answer it straightforward, but I think it came down to basically saying he trusts the subs, and that includes this wave of youngsters more than perhaps he did last year, and feels more comfortable rotating, feels more comfortable playing them. Someone like Conor Bradley, suddenly a huge asset to this team. Before that, they had Robertson and really no one to replace him with, or when Trent was out, then it was a huge drop as well. So it seems to work better, and I think they still have enough. Don't forget, they will probably rest a lot of players for the second leg against Sparta Prague. So they'll come into this game fairly fresh, I think, and they're huge favourites.
I mean, it is remarkable, I think, what Liverpool have achieved in the last couple of weeks with all these absentees. And I think you talk about, you know, Klopp's influence on Liverpool as he nears the end of his tenure, to have successfully imbued his squad with the kind of qualities he wants to see to such an extent that you've got teenagers coming into the first 11 with almost zero first team experience and managing to put in the kinds of performance they put in against Chelsea in the League Cup final, against City last weekend in the Premier League. I think that they're, without getting too carried away about it, but you know, given that we are beginning to reflect on his legacy, I think the fact that that Liverpool remain as competitive as they are, still in the hunt for Premier League titles, still in the Cup, still in the Europa League, producing these performances with all these like young players and the squad creaking at the hinges, it kind of shows that there is something, you know, that has been created that is very strong.
It's the Klopp Dameron. Would that be right, Rafa?
Yeah.
Klopp Dameron.
Dameron.
Okay.
I know what Tom's saying, but I think the youngsters
disagree.
Not disagree so much, but I would point out that the youngsters are coming in positions where youngsters can thrive, sort of out wide, fullback.
What, at centre-back?
Centre-back against Haaland?
Yeah, but I think they've still got Van Dijk there. I think they've still got a spine. The mid, you know, McAllister's been brilliant since the turn of the year. They've still got, all right, Jota's at the moment, they've still got a rotating cast of forwards. I think that's the difference to last year when it really did feel like they were kind of running on empty, even the first team players. So
now running on emotion.
Nice. I think Saudi Arabia have done a huge favour to this team.
Yeah.
It didn't perhaps feel like it at the time, but losing Fabinho and Henderson forced Klopp into a bigger makeover than perhaps he had anticipated. And the midfield looks so much happier, fresher. Endo, who took some time before he got going, I think had to adjust to the tempo, now is a brilliant player in this position and shows you why he was so highly rated in Stuttgart. It's worked out really well for this team.
Meanwhile, the news this week that Michael Edwards, the former sporting director, is going to be returning and apparently bringing the current Bournemouth sporting director, former Golazzo panelist and friend of the show, Richard Hughes, with him. Why is that so important?
It's very important because I think FSG are stepping back from running the day-to-day side of things, with Mike Gordon taking a much lower profile role. He's already been in the process of doing less, and they want somebody to run the club for them. And apparently it's an FSG appointment rather than a Liverpool one, so he sits sort of up above Liverpool in a way and will also be responsible for possibly a second club that they're buying.
Ooh.
But it shows you how I think Liverpool, maybe slightly counterintuitively, but I think it makes a lot of sense, are moving away from the all-powerful manager that Klopp has become. He didn't set out to be that kind of manager. I think FSG didn't think he would evolve into that manager, having worked always under sporting director at Dortmund and in Mainz, to having the most powerful figure above running things and then appointing the next manager and making sure that there's a sort of identity and a structure that's independent of whoever's manager at the time.
Which makes it quite neat that they're playing Manchester United this weekend, because obviously when Ferguson left, United just tried to carry on with the structure they had, but without Alex Ferguson, and I mean, I guess
there wasn't
still
really a structure.
No, exactly. So,
and also having Michael Edwards kind of floating above the football operations is almost a physical manifestation of the "how am I doing, boss?" Liverpool meme. So that's that's another box ticked.
Very
which
nice.
I'm sure entered into their thinking.
If you're thinking the name sounds familiar, listener, of course he was the sporting director who brought in Klopp, as well as Mo Salah, Firmino, Sadio Mane, Alisson, and Virgil van Dijk. He also, and this is key, convinced Barcelona to part with 142 million for Coutinho.
And he still doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
Is that right?
Mike Edwards. I wrote a piece about him about, I don't know, 5 years ago, and the intro was like, you know, there's loads of Michael Edwards on Wikipedia, but not this one.
Okay.
And I remember thinking, oh, that'll get sorted out at some point, because he's quite an influential figure in English football's recent history. Still no sign of it.
You checked?
I check all right regularly.
Does Richard Hughes have a Wikipedia page? Because he does. Lovely chap.
Yes.
Former Atalanta youth product, featured for Portsmouth, been on this show, and yeah. Lovely chap. Very nice man. Very nice
I interviewed
man.
Him for that very piece. And
did
he
you?
Was very nice.
Excellent. Nice to get some sporting director chat.
Well, it's a slightly trite point, but with clubs now unable to buy players because of PSR, exchanging sporting directors is the new club call.
How are Man United doing on their big sporting director signing? Because that was heralded as being a game changer for them. But
it's a very important time now for gardening.
Yeah.
Because you know, first shoots and stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
So you can't leave now.
Everyone's tending their roses.
Very good.
Potential
green
shoots of recovery for United on the pitch, in that looks like Rasmus Højlund might be back, which would make a big difference if he's fit. And their defensive injury crisis appears to be easing slightly as well. Mason Mount.
What?
Remember him? He's also back in training this week. So, you know, there's that.
Thanks for that, Tom. What have you got to say about Man City's clash with Newcastle, who knocked City out of the Carabao Cup, of course, this season. No, that was back at theirs. This is at the Etihad.
It feels like Newcastle's season is over already. It's like they're sort of slightly on the beach. Is this in the FA Cup?
This is in the FA Cup, yeah. The FA Cup, the same competition that Erling Haaland of Man City has scored 8 goals in his career, but only in 2 matches. There was a hat-trick against Burnley last season, and then in the last round of this year's tournament, 5 goals against Luton.
I mean, a year ago you would have said, okay, Newcastle are tough to beat. They can cause problems for City, but
not
whenever I've seen them this year, they've been defensively shambolic, including that one game against Liverpool where they gave up the highest XG in
7.2.
XG history.
Yeah. I mean.
So it's hard to see anything but a very successful afternoon for Erling Haaland.
They needed a good cup run, Newcastle, which they kind of have had against the quarterfinals. But the one thing they didn't want was to get drawn away to Manchester City. And
that's what's happened.
That's what's happened, yeah.
Maybe crumb of comfort, potentially. Mm. I mean, City have been quite scratchy of late. They annihilated Luton in the previous round. But their league form, they're still winning almost every game.
Right.
But they haven't been like taking teams to the cleaners, you know. Drew at home to Chelsea, 1-0 against Brentford, 1-0 at Bournemouth. Weren't particularly convincing against Liverpool last weekend. Slightly fortunate, probably, not to concede a penalty right at the end. So it's not like they're absolutely, dismantling teams. Although I fully expect them to dismantle
Newcastle. Okay. All right, there you go. That's Man City Newcastle. Man City not the top scorers in the FA Cup this season. Do you know who is?
Coventry City,
16 goals, woof. And they're taking on Wolves this weekend for the first time in a decade. Wolves with all sorts of injury issues. Neto going off, of course, last weekend. Hwang Hee-chan also out the picture. Matez Cunha. Well, if Coventry win, let me just say this, it'll be the fourth time in 8 seasons that Mark Robins of FA Cup fame has taken the Sky Blues to Wembley. So that's very impressive.
Yeah, they're a good team, Coventry. Obviously, they lost a few key players last season when they didn't go up. Obviously, lost to Luton in the playoff final, but they've bounced back really well. And, they'll fancy their chances against the depleted Wolves, although I'm sure, Wolves are in such a good position now in the league that I'm sure Gary O'Neill knows this is a rare opportunity to progress them to Wembley, at least in the semis. But,
I mean, the last time Coventry won an FA Cup quarterfinal was back in 1987. All know what happened then.
Well, indeed.
It'd be great to see Coventry in the final. They won it, Duncan.
Yeah. Keith Houchin. Yeah.
And all that.
John Sillett.
Yeah, your John Sillers, your Keith Houchinses.
Your Granada Bet. Were they sponsored by Granada Bet? I believe they were.
Before my time, I'm afraid.
Wow. Rather more recently, the 2021 final saw Chelsea take on Leicester, with the Foxes emerging victorious. Those two teams meet again in the Cup Sunday lunchtime. The Blues, who had a 3-2 victory against Newcastle on Monday night after our previous show with a fantastic goal from Mikhailo Mudryk. The Foxes are currently top of the Championship, but dropping points all over. They've only picked up, indeed, 4 from the last 15 available.
It'd be very on-brand, I think, for Chelsea to have a good cup run.
Yeah.
Because they remind you a little bit of the Chelsea of sort of the late 90s, early 2000s, always pretty shambolic in the league. Maybe that's too strong a word, but inconsistent, but individuals that can decide big games. And yeah, I think whenever I've seen them play recently, I felt that they always just feel a little bit short of clicking. Something could happen any given moment in both directions, admittedly, but there is a lot of quality there. I disagree with Tim Sherwood slightly on that count.
Well, what was Tim Sherwood's point?
The post-match interview after the Chelsea Newcastle game on Monday with Cole Palmer, who was again exceptional, goal and an assist, and Sherwood basically says,
all you need is some players to play with. I know you can't say that, but I'm saying it. I just think you need more quality around you. For me, he needs to build the team around you.
Was he being provocative?
No, I think he thought, as he probably often does, that he was sharing some searing insight that demanded to be, you know, shared with the viewing public, and put Cole Palmer in a really awkward position. Mm. And he sort of did his best to, you know, diplomatically fend off Sherwood's question.
In terms of Chelsea's performance on Monday, was that signs of your springtime green shoots and things?
I mean, yeah. Well, as Raf says, every now and again you watch Chelsea and you think, okay, I can see what they're trying to do here. You know, there is now more consistency in Pochettino's team selection. You know who's going to play where. You know, Palmer is now the key man. The midfield is pretty settled. And, you know, occasionally they give you these signs that they're capable of, you know, great things. And they produce some impressive performances this season. You know, I still think they were quite unfortunate against Liverpool in the League Cup final, but they're never very far away from, like, the wheels coming off and, you know, losing a game they shouldn't lose. I mean, you know, you'd have them as strong favourites against Leicester, I think, particularly given Leicester's pretty disappointing recent league form. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, something is happening at Chelsea. I'm not sure what it is necessarily.
Okay.
But something. But imagine it's like a scientific experiment.
Mm.
Test tubes full of multicoloured liquids are bubbling, and at some point it may produce.
The 1.2 billion spend is slowly coming to fruition, I think.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, we'll get further evidence one way or another Sunday at 12:45. The win over Newcastle, one of two big Chelsea stories this week, the other being the news that with Maurizio Sarri unexpectedly resigning as Lazio manager on Tuesday, he'd had enough. Players weren't with him, he said. And with that same day, Rafa Benitez being dismissed by Celta Vigo, the 10 Chelsea managers that preceded their current man Pochettino will all be, as it stands, out of work in June 2024. Get your heads around that. This stat comes courtesy of Rob at Journalism RP on
at Journalism socials. _RP.
_RP. Thank you. And yeah, he points out that everybody who had that role, that cursed role, before Pochettino is either out of work or, in one case, will be out of work, barring changes. And that's Thomas Tuchel I'm referring to. Come this June. The 10 in question being Graham Potter, Thomas Tuchel, Frank Lampard, although he's got a lucrative career in advertising, I see, Maurizio Sarri, that man Antonio Conte, Gus Hiddink, Jose Mourinho, Rafa Benitez, Roberto Di Matteo, and who's the other one?
AVB.
AVB, who's currently running for the presidency of Porto, as it happens. So no longer interested in such humdrum matters as managing. He's got Paris Dakar and club presidency and that sort of thing going on.
I mean, it's very on brand, isn't it, for Chelsea? This, I mean,
excellent. It's extraordinary, though, isn't it?
I mean, it is a poison's chalice. They put the chalice to their lips and now they're all sucked.
But
now they're all dead.
What's great is if Chelsea came out tomorrow sleeping and appointed any one of those managers, you wouldn't be that surprised. You'd be like,
get them back. Yeah. Sarri, Graham Potter, and Dream Team.
Like kind of Ocean's 11.
Which would you pick?
Chelsea 10. I haven't seen Gus Hiddink for a while. I don't know. I might go.
Well, who would you pick to win games and achieve things? Or who would you win?
I think I'd probably go. I'd go Benitez, I think, because Chelsea fans really love him. They did win a European trophy for them. So, you know, got
unfinished business. That would be the hashtag.
Well, name Jose Mourinho in there. Well, there you go. We'll see whether Pochettino can survive his sip from the poison chalice. And perhaps the game against Leicester this weekend will be key in that sense. Duncan, thank you so much for being with us. And Tom and Rafa and Liam and Charlie in the booth. A new listener. Been great having your company. Do join us Sunday. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.